Please, would you turn with me to the book of Psalms, Psalms chapter 3. Okay, so we're looking at Psalms chapter 3. I will read it out to you. And this is, if you're all there, Psalms 3, a psalm of David when he fled from his son Absalom. O Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. But you are a shield around me, O Lord. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head. To the Lord I cry aloud, and he answers me from his holy hill. I lie down and sleep. I wake up because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side. Arise, O Lord, deliver me, O my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people, Selah. Now the title of this psalm, as is recorded in the Hebrew Bibles and which would be in your Bible, is a psalm of David when he fled from his son Absalom. Now history tells us that King David was one of the greatest kings of Israel. His military conquests were legendary, and the influence of Israel went far beyond its boundaries, and we see that Israel's physical boundaries itself were extended. But when we come to chapter 11 of 2 Samuel, we see that David is caught up in two sins, the sins of adultery and the sins of murder. And we see that Nathan confronts him. The prophet Nathan rebukes him, and David repents. But the child that is born in from adultery dies. Sorry, is there an echo? This incident where David commits adultery and he is forgiven by God somehow seems to mark the beginning of things going wrong in King David's life and his family. Now, when you come to 2 Samuel chapter 13, you will see that it records David's firstborn son, Amnon, violating his half-sister Tamar. Now, Amnon was David's son through his wife Ahinoam, and Tamar was David's daughter through his wife Maacah. And this is an incident which seems to set in motion a series of events which will ultimately lead to David fleeing from the capital city for his own life. Now, chapter 13 tells us that Tamar has a brother, Absalom, and Absalom waits quietly to take revenge on Amnon for violating his sister, and he wants to avenge his sister's honor. Ultimately, we see that 2 years later, Absalom will murder his half-brother Amnon. And he flees Jerusalem to a place called Geshur. And we see that David knows that one son is dead, and he misses Absalom. And we see that Joab, who is the commander of David's armies, he intervenes, and he gets Absalom to come back. But David does not see him for a period of 2 years. And by the time we come to 2 Samuel chapter 14, we will see that although Absalom has met his father, we see that defiance and rebellion and bitterness has been festering, and Absalom comes to a point where he's in the midst of a conspiracy to overthrow his own father, King David, as king. And we see that these are some of the things he does. If you turn to 2 Samuel chapter 15. If you turn to 2 Samuel chapter 15, verses 1 to 6, I'll read them to you. In the course of time, Absalom provided himself with a chariot and horses, and with 50 men to run ahead of him. He would get up early and stand by the side of the road leading to the city gate. Whenever anyone came with a complaint to be placed before the king for a decision, Absalom would call out to him, "What town are you of?" He would answer, "Your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your claims are valid and proper, but there is no representative of the king to hear you." And Absalom would add, "If only I were appointed judge in the land, then everyone who has a complaint or case would come to me, and I would see that he gets justice." Also, whenever anyone approached him to bow down before him, Absalom would reach out his hand, take hold of him, and kiss him. Absalom behaved in this way toward all the Israelites who came to the king asking for justice. And so he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And we see that through these strategies where Absalom tries to Absalom tries to sort of usurp the place that King David has in people's hearts, it comes to a place where we will read on in chapter 15, where there is a much bigger following behind Absalom. He has won the people's heart, and he eventually will declare himself as king of Hebron with a large following around him. Now, in this chapter, chapter 15 of 2 Samuel, when we come to verse 14, we realize that King David comes to a realization. He realizes that if I don't leave the capital, I'm not going to survive. Absalom is going to kill all of us. And so he makes a decision to take his household, his officials, and his servants and flee from the capital. And in that chapter, in verse 30, this is what you will read, that as King David left Jerusalem, he was barefoot, he was weeping, and he had covered his head. And all those who went beside him, all those who were watching him, the people, they were weeping. Because this was the king, the great King David, who had been now reduced to a man fleeing his own son. A broken man fleeing his own son, barefoot, weeping, with his head covered. Now, this is some of the context of Psalms chapter 3. But this is not all. Because you see, intertwined in this conspiracy that Absalom created to overthrow and even kill King David is a story of three other men. These three men are Ahithophel, Mehibosheth, and Shimei. Now let me start with Ahithophel. Now Ahithophel was one of David's counselors. And in 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 23, we will read that both David and Absalom, they considered the advice given by Ahithophel of such high standard that it was equal to somebody who had inquired of God. So can you imagine the distress that David goes through? He is leaving his capital city, afraid for his life because his son wants to kill him. And he hears the news that this counselor, whose advice is held so highly, has now joined hands with his son, Absalom. But that is not all. Because close on the heels of the news of the defection of Ahithophel to the side of Absalom, David will receive news from a man called Ziba. Now, who was Ziba? You will find this in this chapter. Now, Ziba was a steward of a man called Mehibosheth, right? Now, who was Mehibosheth? Now, when King David became a king, he wanted to do something good for the family of Saul and Jonathan. So he makes inquiries. He says, "Is there anyone of King Saul or Jonathan's family that I can show kindness to?" And in verse chapter 9 of 2 Samuel, he is told by Ziba, who was an official in the palace of King Saul, that yes, there is a son called Mehibosheth, who is a son of Jonathan, your friend. He is crippled in both his feet, and he is the only surviving member. And what does King David do? He says, "I will give him all the lands that belong to King Saul, and I want him to sit at my table, the king's table, and eat with me like one of the king's sons." But as David is fleeing Jerusalem, He's heard the news that Ahithophel has changed sides, has gone to Absalom. Now Ziba comes to him and tells him, you know, Mephibosheth, my master, he is staying back in Jerusalem because he thinks the kingdom will be given to him. Now later on, we will read that this is not true. But at that moment, when David is fleeing Absalom, he has heard of the defection of Ahithophel, the news that this man to whom he showed such kindness was betraying him, would have been hard to take. But that is not all, because this is a journey where David is almost stripped away of all that he holds dear. Because as you read chapter 15 and chapter 16, you will see that after Ahithophel's defection, after the betrayal of Mephibosheth, we see that David then passes along with his huge following to a place called Behurim. And we will see this in verse 5 of chapter 16, that as David and his followers reach this place, a man comes out to meet them. Now, this man was a Benjamite who was from the clan of Saul. And as he comes out, what does he do? He begins throwing stones and dirt at King David and his guards. And he begins cursing King David. I will read to you what he says. It's in 2 Samuel chapter 16, verses 7 to 8. Okay. As he cursed, Shimei said, get out, you man of blood, you scoundrel. The Lord has repaid you for all the blood you shed in the household of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. The Lord has handed the kingdom over to your son, Absalom. You have come to ruin because you are a man of blood. And so we have Ahithophel's defection, we have Mephibosheth betraying David, and we have Shimei cursing him. And perhaps the worst curse that he can say is that God has abandoned you. And this is the context of Psalms chapter 3. David is fleeing for his own life from nobody else but his son Absalom. This is a son he loves dearly. And if you read the rest of the chapters, you will see how much David loved Absalom. But Absalom had become the darling of the people. The Bible says he was blemishless. He had such long hair, and there was no one as handsome as him in the kingdom. And then he hears that Ahithophel, this man whose word is considered to be equal, his advice is considered to be equal as one who inquires of the Lord. This man is now advising Absalom. And then Mephibosheth, the man to whom he had shown such kindness, seems to have betrayed him. And finally, worst of all, a king who is pelted with stones and dirt and cursed by Shimei. And this is the context in which David writes Psalms 3. In simple terms, David's world seems to have fallen apart. Now this morning, this psalm penned by David thousands of years ago speaks to us, because the reality of our life in this broken world is this, that there will be days in your life and my life when it seems our world is falling apart. You know, perhaps your children rebel. You know, I've heard parents say, they say, I don't know what happened. I had this lovely child, and it's like a switch has been turned on, and everything's gone wrong. Have you heard that? Or you have long-standing relationships which become bitter. You know, friendships that you held so deeply have been torn apart. Perhaps someone you looked up to has moved away, or God has taken them home, or your support network has crashed, or it has collapsed. Perhaps you have been betrayed. Someone you have invested time and money in, as David invested in Mephibosheth, has turned and thrown your kindness in your face. Or perhaps you have been slandered against, or you face an unprecedented a change, a sudden illness, or financial needs that you never thought you would face. And sometimes, of course, our world falls apart because of our own mistakes, because sin destroys. It destroys the very foundation of our life, and compromise corrupts. And sometimes it almost feels like we are in a boxing ring and life is just boxing us and we are just reeling and trying to stand up. Now, many of you have been praying for my brother David and my sister-in-law Anju. I just want to thank you. Some of you know their story. Around 6, 7 years ago, God bless them with this baby son who passed away 4 hours after birth. And so 2 weeks ago, when my sister-in-law, who was heavily pregnant, she began to feel that there weren't many movements, they went into hospital. I did send a text to many of you, and thank you so much for praying. This baby was born, but this baby has been in intensive care for a lot of days. Yesterday, he was moved to another hospital. And I just want to thank you for praying, because God blessed them with a baby boy, and I just want to thank you for that. But on Thursday, my parents went to see my brother and sister-in-law. They were traveling from another city in India, 5 hours away on the train. So my brother left his wife and the baby at the hospital, and he went home to get the home ready for my parents. As he arrived home, this is what he saw. The house had been burgled. Robbers had broken through 2 doors with bolt cutters. They had a removal van. They had completely emptied the house. Now, my brother Jonathan, my youngest brother, called me. He said, Priscilla, you need to talk to David, because we are very close. And it was 5 o'clock. I don't know if you, when you get calls from over abroad, if you have family abroad, you know, you get calls in the middle of the night, you're like, okay, should I answer this or not? So I'm like, I picked it up, my heart is beating, and my brother said, you need to speak to David. I said, what is it, the baby? He said, the baby's fine, but this is what happened. Dave, you need to speak to him. And as I thought, Lord, what do I say? What do I say to my brother who is already engaged in one battle where he's crying out to God that this baby would come home? Their bills are piling up. And then he comes home to his house virtually empty. You know, you won't believe it. They even tried to take the dustbin. You know, that's what they did. They took all the food in the house. They even tried to take the dustbin. The dustbin was outside the house because they had dragged it to take it. And I said, Lord, what do I say? How do I respond? I am his older sister, but what do I say? And as I turned to Psalms 3, I thought, how do we respond when it seems life is crashing around us? Our world is falling apart. And this morning, I want to present to you King David's response from Psalms chapter 3. So if you turn once again to Psalms chapter 3, this is what King David says as his world seems to fall apart. O Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. You know, David, and in some other versions it says, Lord, how they are increased who trouble me. I think that's KJV. Now, David responds to this situation where everything has been taken away from him by crying his heart out to God. His enemies are increasing day by day. The Bible tells us that Absalom's following was increasing day by day. But what David does is he takes this situation and he brings it to God. And perhaps the cause of David's greatest distress is that people are saying that God will not deliver you. If God will not deliver you, who can? That is the truth. As C.H. Spurgeon says, it is the most bitter of all afflictions to be led to fear that there is no help for us from God. Perhaps this is David's greatest fear, that they are saying that even God will not deliver you. You know, sometimes it takes our world to fall apart to realize or to be reminded that unlike everything else around us that can be shaken, the Lord God, as Isaiah says, is an everlasting rock who is unshakable. Sometimes it takes for situations to be beyond our control to realize that God is in control. Sometimes it takes unprecedented change, things going completely changing completely for us to realize that the God we serve The God who called us and redeemed us does not change. As David's world falls apart, he turns to God and he declares five unchanging truths about the God who does not change. And these are the truths that I want to submit to you this morning. As David declares these truths, he uses the personal name of God, Jehovah, indicating a personal relationship with God, an intimacy, that idea that he knows this God. And this is no other God. In a world where there are many, many gods, this is no any vague God. This is Jehovah, the God of the Bible. And so as David's world falls apart, he declares firstly, as we will see in verse 3, I'll read verse 3 to you. But you are a shield around me, O Lord. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head. Now, as David's world falls apart, the first thing he declares about God is, Jehovah, you are my shield. Now, the verse says, you are a shield around me. Now, the Hebrew word used here to describe a shield around me is the same word that is used by the prophet Jeremiah in Lamentations 3:7, where he says, he has walled me in so I cannot escape. You see, as David is pursued by his enemies and as his life is in danger, he lifts up his eyes and he sees this truth, that God is a shield to him. But unlike shields of the day, perhaps it covered your front and you could be attacked from the behind. You could be attacked from the your sides. God's shield is a shield that walls you in. It is something that cannot be penetrated unless God allows it. It is a shield where you are secure because God is like no other shield which can leave you exposed. God is a shield who is secure, strong. He is an everlasting rock that cannot be shaken. And David, even as life falls apart and he is surrounded with evidence after evidence of his world falling apart, he lifts up his eyes and he sees that God totally surrounds him. And as his children, God totally surrounds us. How do we know this? Psalms 18:30 says, he is a shield to all those who take refuge in him. Do you take your refuge in the Lord? He is a shield to you. 1 Peter verse 6 says that by faith we are shielded. This is again the same word used by Jeremiah. It says that we are garrisoned. We are walled in by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. So as David declares, the Lord is our shield, he knows that any other shield would leave him exposed. But God is a shield who completely surrounds us. I don't know what your situation is and what attacks you are facing. Remember this, though, that God is a shield to you. He covers you. He walls you in. You are in his protection. That doesn't mean that suffering does not come. That means that pain does not come. But it comes with God beside you. You are not alone in this. As a child of God, if you are walking with him, you are not alone in this. He is an He is a shield that cannot be penetrated. Right. Secondly, David declares, the Lord Jehovah is my shield. Now he declares, Jehovah is my glory. Now, David writes this as a time where he is far removed from all the symbols of personal glory. He's not in his palace made of cedar. He's not enjoying the luxuries that come with royalty. He's not secure. He is in the wilderness. He is covered with dirt. He is barefoot. He's weeping. His head is covered. But he lifts up his head and he says, the Lord Jehovah is my glory. Now the word glory, the Hebrew word used for my glory is kabodi. Do you remember we had a sermon in the church about kabod? So my glory is kabodi. And the idea or the word kabodi means, kabod means weightfulness or weightiness or significance. So the idea is, as David is saying, when I look at all that I have achieved and I own, and when I weigh them on a scale, God is the most weightiest of it all. You know, David realizes, as everything is stripped away, if there is any glory he has, it is in his God. And you know what? You and I were created for his glory. And this is why sin is coming short of God's glory. Sin is making substitutes for God's glory. Sometimes, when our world falls apart, it's then that we realize that we have made substitutes for God's glory and that other things have become weightier in our life. We see that even as David loses everything, his kingdom, his palaces, his possessions, and even his family, he can declare, Jehovah is my glory. Who is your glory today? What are you glorying in? Have you made substitutes to the glory of God? You were created for his glory, not your own, not anyone else's. You were created for his glory. And the Lord, and David says, you are my glory. Thirdly, David declares, Jehovah is the lifter of my head. Now, the idea of the lifter of my head comes from the Hebrew expression where it is understood that when someone is sorrowful or when they are humiliated or they face dishonor, their head is downcast or lies low. And as David walks with his head covered, weeping while fleeing Jerusalem, he has experienced both great sorrow and dishonor. So as David declares that Jehovah is the lifter of my head, this is what David is saying, that God is my joy because he is the fountain of all joy, and it is God who raises me up, because David knows that any honor that he has came from God, because it was God who raised up a lowly shepherd boy to be king. He knows that it is God who humbles the proud and who lifts the humble who call out to him. Now, the joy of the Lord being our strength, or saying that God is our joy, what does it mean? This is what it means. It means that God is the source of our joy and he is the object of our joy. You know, when you think about God, what is the primary thought that comes to you? Of course, we stand in reverent fear because he's holy. But when you think of who he is, do you have an experience of joy? When you think of coming into his presence, is there an experience of joy that people don't understand? You know, I mean, I remember people at work used to think, why do you want to go to church twice on a Sunday? Well, I love it. You know, is there a sense of joy when you think about God? As David is stripped of all that could bring him joy in an earthly sense, he realizes that he can lift up his head and he can be joyous, because not only does his joy come from God, but this God is also the object of his joy. Do you joy in God? Is God the object of your joy? Do you think about his greatness from day to day? Do you think about his goodness from day to day? Do you think about how holy he is? And does it fill you with, amongst many other things, does it fill you with an overflowing joy? That this is my God and he is in control of the situation. He is sovereign. He will decide what happens tomorrow. Does that fill you with joy? Because God is our joy. He is the uplifter of our heads. So David declares, firstly, God Jehovah, you are my shield. Secondly, God Jehovah, you are my glory. Thirdly, God Jehovah, you are the uplifter of my head. You are my joy. You are the one who gives me honor. Then fourthly, David declares, as we see in verse 5, I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. David declares that it is God who upholds him. The future is uncertain for David. He knows that it is God who sustains him. Even as he hears reports, this is what he hears. I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side. Even as he hears reports of tens of thousands coming against him, he knows that he does not need to be afraid. David was no longer lying down in a palace. He was lying down in the wilderness. But he knows that it is God who gives him sleep, and it is God who sustains him to wake up. You know, sometimes it is when our world is shaken that we realize that it's not our jobs, it's not our money, it's not our status, it's not our personal strengths or skills, it's not our families that sustain us. Sometimes in the storms of life, that is when we come to clearly see only the goodness of God sustains us. We've sang that today. All my life you have been faithful. It is the goodness of God that sustains us. His mercy, his grace, his love for us. And if you have thought something else was sustaining you, sometimes your world will fall apart because nothing else can sustain you. And you will realize that no. It's not my job. It's not my money. It's not my friends. It's not my contacts. None of those things sustain me. It's God, his goodness, which sustains me. And sometimes God will allow your world to fall apart so that you can lift up your head and see who sustains you. Who remains when everything falls? God and God alone. So David declares, Jehovah is my shield. Jehovah is my glory. Jehovah is the lifter of my head. Jehovah is my sustainer. Finally, David declares in verse 8, from the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. He declares that Jehovah is my deliverer. From him, deliverance comes alone. Now, David has put in various strategies. Even as he's fleeing from Absalom, he has put in some strategies. What does he do? He sends Hushai, who is another counselor. He says, go back, because Ahithophel will be advising Absalom, and you can go back and you can counter the advice given by Ahithophel, right? And he tells Zadok, the high priest, to go back with the ark. And even though he said these things, David knows that his deliverance is not in his military strategies, or it is not because Hushai has gone back and he will advise Absalom. He knows it's not because the high priests are on his side. He knows that if deliverance comes, it will come from the Lord. And he trusts God so much that he says that even if deliverance does not come, I'm pleased, I'm okay with it. Let me read that verse to you. You'll find that in 2 Samuel chapter 15. Chapter 15, verse 25. This is what David says to the high priest Zadok. He says, take the ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the Lord's eyes, he will bring me back. And let me see it and his dwelling place again. But if he says, I'm not pleased with you, then I'm ready. Let him do to me whatever seems good to him. David knows that perhaps God will not deliver him. But David is okay with that because his trust is in God. You know, today you and I can be comforted even if your world is falling apart. I don't know if your world is falling apart. Some of us, we're okay. But for some others, we've heard news after news after news, and we are reeling. We're like, Lord, I can't really stand. But to you, this is what David says, that Jehovah delivers his children. Sometimes it means that he will completely remove you from the pain and the situation. But sometimes it means that he will walk with you in the fire. And sometimes it means that you will find an instant solution. And sometimes it means that you will just have to walk in his grace. But even if your world is falling apart, we can be assured like David that Jehovah Mephalti, the God who delivers, the Lord who delivers, is beside you. Now, was David delivered from his situation? Actually, he was. What happened? First, let's look at Ahithophel. Ahithophel, as I said, was a counselor whose word, whose advice was considered equal to anyone who inquires of God. What happens? Ahithophel gives Absalom some advice. Hushai gives Absalom some advice. Absalom listens to Hushai. Ahithophel goes home. And what does he do? He commits suicide. Right? Then we see Absalom. As I said, Absalom was David's dear son. He was known for his physical appearance. He had long hair. I know. I was reading about it. It said he had so much hair, they weighed it, and he weighed this much. I thought, oh, we need to know what he did for his hair. But that hair was his destruction, because we know as he rode out into war, what happens? His hair gets tangled in a tree. And his mule walks away. And David had instructed his servant, saying, don't harm him. Be gentle to him. This is the son who wanted to kill him. And David says, be gentle to him. But Joab goes against David's advice, David's commands. And what does he do? He kills Absalom. So Absalom is dead. Ahithophel is dead. And David is returning to Jerusalem. And who does he meet on the way? He meets Shimei. Now, you will find this in 2 Samuel chapter 19, 18. Shimei, who was Shimei? He was a man who threw stones and dirt, and he cursed David. And what does he do? He falls prostrate in front of David. He says, please forgive me. Don't kill me. And David promises not to, but we will see later on that Shimei will die at the hands of Solomon. And what about Mephibosheth? Mephibosheth comes to David. We see that David, that his servant, his steward Ziba, has been lying, because Mephibosheth has not trimmed his mustache. He's not taken care of his feet. He has not even washed his clothes. I don't know what the stench was like. But he comes to David, and David said, why didn't you come with me? He said, I wanted to come, but my steward, I'm a cripple, my steward betrayed me. So, you know, all these people who had brought sorrow to David as he fled Jerusalem have come back. God has delivered him. Now, I spoke to you a few minutes ago about my brother, and he has lost a lot. But as I spoke to him, he said, you know, you won't believe it. They emptied the house, but behind the door was all his laptops. Now, if you know my brother, all his work is on his laptop. And he said, in the midst of that, I could just thank God that everything was gone, but I don't have to start all my work again because the laptops are there. And I know it's not easy. They go to an empty house, it's not easy. But even in the worst of it all, God's goodness is there. It's there. And this morning, if your world seems to fall apart, can I encourage you that amongst the pain, amongst the uncertainty, and the chaos, you know what it means when your world falls apart? It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to see that you can trust God. It's an opportunity to put everything at his feet and say, God, I trust you. And to see him once again as what? As your shield that covers you. A shield that cannot be penetrated. As your glory, the weightiest thing in your life, the only thing that should matter, as your lifter of the head, as the one who gives you honor, but as a God who is your joy, the source of your joy and the object of your joy, as your sustainer. You know, when you go to bed and you wake up, maybe you think you have a great sleep routine, so you woke up, blah, blah, blah. No, you woke up because of God's mercies, because he let you have another day. Every breath that you have comes from him. He is your sustainer. You know what? I believe in healthy living. I don't always do it. You should do it because God, you should be good stewards of your body. But you know what? My trust about tomorrow, my hope about tomorrow is that God, if he has given me another day, I will see it. And if he hasn't, I am going home and it's all good because he is my sustainer. And finally, to see God as your deliverer. Have you been in situations where you thought every door is shut? There's no way I'm going to get out. There is no way out of this. And at the last moment, what does God do? He turns everything upside down. And from somewhere you didn't know, what comes? Deliverance comes. Because he is your deliverer. And as David's world falls apart, you know, he's going back to all the palaces, the glory, everything. But he's going back with the greatest treasure of all, God, and seeing God once again as he is. Let me tell you, if your world is falling apart, this is an opportunity to stand up and to see God as he is. And that is the greatest treasure that anyone could ever give you. God bless you.